So the court's going to call 13-25-00622-CB, City of Kingsville, Texas. Norma Nelda Alvarez, Hector M. Hinojosa, and Leonel Leo H. Alacron versus Selena Tijerina.
Your Honor, before I get started, let me introduce the court to my clients. Norma Nelda, Commissioner Norma Nelda Alvarez, Hector Hinojosa, no relation, Commissioner, and Commissioner Leonel Leo Alarcón. All three are duly elected officials, city commissioners for the city of Kingsville. Recall petitions in the state of Texas are determined in depending upon the type of city, in terms of what the law is applicable. If you are a Class A, Class B city, which is a small city, there are statutory provisions that tell you exactly how you conduct a recall petition. But when it comes to a home rule city, which the city of Kingsville is, the city charter, which is adopted by the city, the citizens of the city of Kingsville, sets out in detail how to conduct a recall election, and the procedure for applying for petition for a recall petition. The city charter, as the court well knows, is like the constitution for a city. That is what a city is bound by, and that is what these three elected officials are bound by. The provisions of the constitution of the city of Kingsville, which we call a city charter. In this instance, Your Honors, there is no question as to what happened. There's a question as how you interpret it, but there is no question as to what happened. Ms. Tijerina obtained filed an affidavit with the city secretary of the city of Kingsville on May the 6th, 2025. That affidavit, under the under Article 2, Section 24.3, I believe, has to be filed with the city secretary, and that triggers the start of the process by which there is a timeline by which she has to file the petition.
And then I guess the disagreement is, should the city benefit from the acknowledgement that was given the next day that says she has 30 days from that date?
Right. Well, that is a reading that the appellees tried to convince the court is applicable. But if you look at the city charter, and again, the city charter, you apply statutory construction principles just as if it were a statute in determining. And if you look at the specific language in the chart, in the charter, Your Honor, there's no question as to what it says. It says, at the very get-go, any qualified voters of the city may make and file with the person performing the duties of city secretary an affidavit containing the names or names of the officers whose removal is sought, and a statement of the grounds for removal. That's section 24.3. Okay, if you go to 24.6, it says all papers comprising a recall petition shall be returned and filed with the city with the person performing the duties of the city secretary within 30 days after the filing of the affidavit heretofore provided for.
Counsel, is it your position that this is a jurisdictional issue?
That's part of it, Your Honor. If you look at the particular charter provisions, which is the Constitution, it tells you when you have the ability to apply to petition for a recall petition. It's just like a lawsuit, you know, it's just like a statute of limitations in a lawsuit. You have to file a lawsuit within 2 years of a negligent act. Here you have to file a petition within 30 days from the date that you filed the required affidavit under 24.3, Your Honor. If you don't file the affidavit in time, there is no pending petition with the court. And the court in Nunn versus New, which is the only Supreme Court case that deals on point with this issue, the court said, if the petition is not filed within 30 days, it is not effective. That means it does not exist. It's like a lawsuit that is filed that is untimely. If you don't file it timely, then you don't have a lawsuit. It is not something that you can litigate. In this instance, if the petition was not filed timely, then the city secretary can do nothing but reject it. In this instance, she made the mistake and accepted it, but she didn't have the authority to accept it if it was not filed within the period of time required under the city charter. And these city commissioners didn't have the power to order an election when they didn't have before them a petition that was effective. That's how you look at it. There can be no question that that's what happened in this case. Now, the appellees try to argue that there's some type of ambiguity in the charter provisions as to when you trigger the 30-day requirement. And as Justice Tijerina mentioned, well, what about this issue with respect to the papers that are given to the petitioner by the city secretary, which is in that same section? Well, that's not what the statute says. The charter says. The charter says, from the date of the filing of the affidavit, we know exactly when the affidavit was filed. That was introduced into evidence by the appellees. It was on May the 6th, 2025. The papers that were submitted to the petitioner were filed by the secretary on May the 7th, the day after that. But that is not the date of the filing of the affidavit. So if you're reading the clear language, clear and unambiguous language of the charter, it is the trigger date is May 6th.
The acknowledgement, I don't think anyone disputes that the acknowledgement says 30 days from this date, which would make it then
Legal.
31 days from the date the affidavit was filed. So what do you say to what I mentioned earlier? It's similar to invited error. The city created that. Now they're going to benefit. They said you have 30 days from this date. Now they're going to benefit from the mistake in the affidavit. I mean, in the acknowledgement.
Well, but the acknowledgement of them is that they received it. But if you look at the evidence,
But it pretty much says you have to have the petition in within 30 days of this acknowledgement.
No, Your Honor, it does not say that, with all due respect. It says all papers comprising a recall petition shall be returned and filed with the person performing the duty of the city secretary within 30 days after the filing of the affidavit, not the acknowledgement of the affidavit, which is the section after that. If you look at the evidence in that was submitted, it if you there is an affidavit. Right. And in the right-hand corner of that affidavit that was filed by Mr. Hirina, it says filed on May 6, 2025, or received on May 6, 2025. So there, she's acknowledging on the date that she actually received it, which is the specific language in the charter. There is no ambiguity to that whatsoever. In fact, even the judge acknowledged that. He just misinterpreted what the requirements were. If you look at the specific language of the judge said the starting date is May the 6th, and then you skip the weekend, and then I'm going to find that the date that it was actually filed was May, that we start counting with May 7th. It's kind of confusing the way he states it in his at the end of the case when he finds for the petition on the writ of mandamus. He does not state that there's any ambiguity. He agrees that the date of the filing was May the 6th. He just counted wrong.
Counsel, let me assume for the sake of argument that you're correct. What's the remedy? What remedy are you seeking?
The only remedy that there is that they have to refile the petition and the timeline starts again. None says that. Nunn versus New specifically said, if you do not file it on time, it is not effective. And the only remedy that you have at that point is to refile the petition. And it starts the
You have an
process.
election set, though.
Huh?
You have an election that's been set.
The court in that situation, that's why we filed this lawsuit right away to get to before the election is actually had. The election is not till May, so there's plenty of time to for the court to rule on that issue.
So your exact remedy is what? That we simply
you the remedy that the court has, I think, in this instance, is to reverse and render that the petition was the writ of mandamus petition was incorrectly granted, and therefore it knocks out the writ of mandamus. The decision rejecting the petition by the commissioners holds, and they have, if Mr. Quirino wants to try to recall them, she has to refile her petition and do it correctly this time. It's just, that is the way it works. That's the only, there is no other authority showing otherwise. What they try to argue, they go back to these Woodfield line of cases where the commissioners don't have any discretion but to accept the petition that's been certified by the city secretary. But in those instances, in those cases, what you see is there's discretionary issues that the commissioners are attempting to rule on, whether or not the language in the petition is correct, whether or not there's enough signatures and so forth. The courts are saying, no, we don't want you to do that because you're the guy, they're people that they're trying to recall. We think that decision has to be made only by the city secretary. And if you don't like it, you can file a suit for declaratory relief. But in this instance, it's different. We don't get to whether the petition was correctly filed under the statute if the petition was never filed, if it was not effective. And that's what Nunn versus New says. It was not effective. Nunn versus New is 75 years old. It's never been reversed. It is good law. There is no authority. There's no cases to say it's wrong. That is the law, which is if you do not file on time, your petition is not effective. And the language in the charter that was being interpreted in Nunn versus New is virtually identical to the language in the charter of the city of Kingsville. So there's no way to get around that unless you reverse Nunn versus New. And that's the problem here. Now, there's an argument that they try to make that in the Susan case that the 13th Court of Appeals some years ago ruled that they had a due process right to challenge a petition by filing a petition for a declaratory relief. But why do you need to do that when you can challenge it in a writ of mandamus and say, look, in this instance, it wasn't filed correctly? There is no question about that. The evidence is undisputed that it was filed, the affidavit was filed on May the 6th, and the petition was filed on June the 6th. That's 31 days.
So the Duffy case says that the district court is the proper forum to argue sufficiency issues. Does the charter provide the city council authority to vote on the sufficiency of a petition that's before them, or should they have done a mandamus to the district court?
Well, if you look at section six, I'm sorry, if you look at section seven, it says in case all of the requirements of this charter shall have been met and the city commission shall fail to refuse to receive the recalled petition or to order such a election, then a district judge can come in and order a recall election. And essentially, that is the jurisdictional issue. If the requirements of the recall petition are not met, which in this instance it was not filed within 30 days, then the district court didn't have any jurisdiction to proceed anything further. It didn't have any jurisdiction to come in here and say on a writ of mandamus, well, I'm going to go ahead and rule on this writ of mandamus for whatever reason, because there was not a valid petition effectively filed in this particular case. And so at the moment, I think these commissioners are obligated. They took an oath to follow the requirements of the law. The charter is really specific in saying that you cannot file a recall petition more than 30 days after the filing of the affidavit. When they were presented with this recall petition that was not effective, they had a legal obligation under the oath that they took that requires them to follow the law, which includes the charter, which is a constitution for the city of Kingsville. They had a legal obligation to reject the petition that was not effectively filed at that time, but that was not effective.
But according to the charter, wasn't it the city secretary's responsibility to determine whether a petition is valid or meets the criteria?
Well, the court in Nunn spoke to that, Your Honor. If you look at the language in Nunn, the court said this. The secretary's duty is to examine the petition for defects which may be corrected. The failure to file in time is not a defect which may be corrected and in any manner except by the filing of a new petition under the terms of the charter. We must conclude, therefore, the recall petition was filed too late. In other words,
you can address that in your follow-up.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
I believe the court. Justices, you know, when we're looking at this, first of all, I think they touch lightly, but hardly at all, in regards to the jurisdictional element in this case. I think it's beyond question that that part of their argument lacks merit. They admitted in front of the trial court that there was jurisdiction. The charter provides for jurisdiction, and there is a difference. Counsel just said if you filed a lawsuit that was beyond the statute of limitations, what does the clerk office do? Well, they don't check it to make sure and just reject it outright. They file it, and you have an affirmative defense that you can raise, and if you don't raise that, you can forfeit it. And so you could have an untimely complaint or personal injury lawsuit that's filed. No one complains. It's tried. You've waived that right. You have forfeited that right. So the jurisdictional argument in this case pretty much fails. I really don't see it. But the main two issues we have are, one is, it's not a matter of counting. It's not a matter of mathematics. It's a matter of charter interpretation. And I know that the appellants, and when I say appellants, I'm talking about the individual commission members, because I think the record is pretty replete with the fact that the people that work at the city of Kingsville, including the city secretary and its mayor, believe that this was timely filed, sufficiently filed, and that their only obligation was that which the law requires, which they have a ministerial duty to get the election handled and done. But when we're looking at the reasonableness of the interpretation, and we look at that phrase, we look at a triggering event, which is filing an affidavit. That's, of course, how you have to do it. It doesn't describe in the charter what does filing mean exactly. Is that an acceptance? Is it some sort of inclusion in the recall documents that are provided by the city or anything of that nature? No, it doesn't. So you've got a provision. You've got one provision that says you have to file an affidavit, but you got a secondary provision that says all papers comprising a recall petition shall be returned within 30 days. Well, how do you return something that hasn't been provided yet? It would seem that Section 6, and I'm not saying it's a picture of clarity here, but it seems to show that you have something to return and you have a 30-day period within which you can do that. You can't return anything till you get it. So the time when you get the acknowledgement and you're provided the petition with the blanks and all the sufficient data, that's the time period that you begin doing this. That is what the city secretary interpreted it as. And absent some unreasonableness in regards to her interpretation and the mayor's interpretation, following the lead of all counsel that have given him advice, then that is what you need to look at. And
didn't the charter, and correct me if I'm wrong, didn't it require that the city secretary provide the petition and other documents to the affiant within a certain period of time?
The charter provides that there's a 2-day period within which that is to be done.
Doesn't that answer that question about?
I don't think so, Your Honor. When you're looking at the question in regards to the reasonableness of an interpretation, you need to, one, look at it to see if it's constitutional and not violative of due process. And when you've got a system in which the true triggering event in regards to the petition being returned is dependent upon somebody else doing their job, then you've laid out a system where the city secretary, let's say she waits 10 days. She doesn't abide by her obligations or his obligations.
Did that happen in this case, or did she get to the information?
She got to it immediately. Days? But as far as the reading of the reasonableness of the statute, I think it's important to see that. Because if the city has complete control over that 30-day window and also has the control to thwart the efforts during that time period so as to force somebody to go get a mandamus, and by the time you actually get the mandamus, the 30-day period's up. And if he's right, then the mandatory period's over with, so you can never get your
recall.
That
didn't happen here in this case, did it?
It did not. But I think
so we need not really wonder whether or not the city could thwart, because it didn't happen in this case, correct?
Well, That's true, but I think it's important for just the interpretation of what's reasonable under the circumstances. And the reasonable inquiry in regards to this was that when they give the acknowledgement, and the case law is out there as well in regards to a city entity using this procedure, even if she was flawed, but to my client's detriment, who is a citizen bringing a recall election properly. So if you give to the city the ability to thwart the efforts, that's what the Supreme Court has a problem with. And I know we're looking at the Nunn case, and I've delineated in there why the facts of that case are completely different. But, you know, there is a plethora of cases since then, including one from this Court of Appeals. And I believe, I'm not sure if he tested on it, but it's the N. Ray Sussin case. And it says, in the absence of a provision for the commission to exercise some sort of veto power. And that doesn't say for the timeliness issue or the number of signatures or the sufficiency or anything else under the sun. Because the charter in this case, in which they rely upon, defines that all these things must be met. But the case law is very clear. Do you have an obligation to do something with that? So in the absence of that provision, you don't have some sort of veto power, which is what they're arguing. They're arguing a complete veto power by the very people that are affected by the recall petition. And they're saying that they need to go out and what? File a lawsuit in district court, create an adversary proceeding, and do what they need to do. In this case, they did nothing. They didn't file any objections. They didn't voice any concerns. They didn't even do it at the vote that they had taken, where the three people voting against it were the very people that were the subject of the recall, which again raises some ethical concerns in regards to that portion of it. But they did nothing. They didn't go file anything. They just utilized their complete veto power that the Supreme Court, and I don't care what case you look at, says that's not proper. The Woodville opinions, and counsel wants to try to minimize it and make light of it, but it's a Supreme Court case, and it makes very clear on certain issues. If the city council believed that the city secretary abused their discretion in certifying the petition or otherwise erred in their duties, they were nevertheless obligated to fulfill its duties and ask for the affirmative release, which was being sought. They had an affirmative duty, just like the mayor found, that they had an affirmative duty to go forward with the recall election, absent them, the appellants, doing something to bring it to the courts, and they did nothing. Even when they did file their answer in regards to the mandamus, they only filed some requests for affirmative, they didn't file any affirmative relief, but they had affirmative defenses. So just like the Susser case and just like Woodville, they never did that. In fact, in the Woodville case, they said, nor do we decide that the city is entitled to affirmative relief because the city has not sought it. The district court judgment remains pending on appeal and on appeal. So it is up to the city. One, there is an interpretation that is valid and complete by the record that is reasonable in the interpretation that it was the triggering event was truly when the acknowledgement is provided to the person and it's in written form and it tells you the specific date that you need to file the petition by. And it was filed by that date. But even then, the city or the appellants have waived or forfeited their right to complain. They have never asked for any affirmative relief before this court, which I think Justice Pena had asked, what is it you're seeking? They've never sought any of that. They have never sought any affirmative relief whatsoever. And that is a concern for everybody in regards to this case. I mean, they could have, they didn't, they chose not to. And they decided, and they still decide to stand firm on the right that they have a right to veto what the city secretary has found sufficient in the case. And they just can't do that. The law doesn't allow for that.
Let me interrupt. Am I correct in assuming that you've not made any equity pleadings in this case or any arguments for equity?
In respect, and if the court is touching on the issue that Justice Tijerina had said in regards to the city taking advantage of a form, then yes, we are. I mean, that is something.
Did you plead that?
Not in regards to the mandamus proceeding, Your Honor. You know, we didn't affirmatively assert the equitable argument, but we did include that in regards to the appeal and our briefing in regards to that. When a governmental entity, before litigation has ensued, is using a form, they can be equitably charged with not being able to take advantage of their concerns or their problems with that. So to that extent, yes, I suppose that some of the relief that we're seeking is equitable in nature, but I don't think you need to get to that point. I think that a reasonable interpretation of the statute and sort of harmonizing it does a couple of things. If you take the provisions in regards to this, one, it preserves voters' rights. which is the utmost concern, especially when you're dealing with elections or in particular recall elections. It prevents city manipulation because you, by delay or otherwise, in regards to affirmatively cutting down the window in which this could occur, and it could cut that theoretically down to zero, and that's what we were talking about. But it also gives meanings to the issuance requirements that the city secretary has to put these together, provide the blank forms, put in all the dates, provide the acknowledgement, do all these things, which the charter doesn't really talk about acknowledgement versus filing or anything of that nature. But the city has interpreted it to mean that, and that's why they provided the documents that Ms. Tijerina relied upon in this case. But more importantly, it also keeps the due process concerns and the constitutionality of the recall election in line. I know they want to say every time, 30 days after the affidavit's filed, but that does not seem workable. And there is an ambiguity as found by the trial court as well. I think the trial court said it's not really clear. It is somewhat ambiguous, but if in the sense that it is ambiguous and there are sort of contradicting provisions in regards to when this begins to run, then that should inure to the benefit of Ms. Tijerina, who brought this this lawsuit or this mandamus, and not for the city.
Would it matter then if it was one day or 10 days or 30 days or 45 days after the filing of the affidavit?
I don't think so. I think what would be dependent upon what the clerk has to do, because I think the court has hit on it exactly, is that if the clerk is allowed to delay to avoid the necessity of the recall election, then the triggering event, as you read it, would be the acknowledgement and the provisions providing the petition to be filed. And so that's the triggering event. Now, had the city secretary waited 2 days to the maximum according to the charter, or had waited 3 days?
Is the acknowledgement required per charter, or is that just a document that the city secretary uses to verify that she provided those on a certain date?
I think it's required by the charter because it states, let me pull it up real quick. It says that on provision two, they have to provide the affidavit to them. And then with 2 working days, they're going to provide the information, the affidavits, and all the information required to it. So it is required. There's a step process in regards to this. Yes.
Well, they have to give them the information within 2 days, the petitions and other things, but they're not required to receive a signature from the affiant. Saying I've received this petition. I mean, that's just something I'm thinking they're doing to cover their own bases.
I think they're doing it to maintain a certain stability in regards to it, and they're notifying the petitioner exactly how long they have to return.
My question was, do they have to do that? Because you could hand them over the petition, give them the information, and I would think that the affiant, or in this case, Ms. Tijerina, would know the amount of time that they have to return those documents to the city per the charter.
And I think reading that, the reading is that once the documents are acknowledged and provided to them, that they have 30 days from that date. Because the statute specifically, or the charter specifically says it shall be returned. Well, again, you can't return something within 30 days if you didn't have it in 30 days. So basically what that reads is, sort of strangely, is if they're correct, is that, you know, you have to return this regardless of when we provide this to you in a time period that's dependent upon something that occurred in the past. And I think that's an unreasonable and unworkable reading of the charter in this case, and works to delay the process. It works to thwart the constitutional rights and due process rights of any citizen who's trying to bring a delay, especially in the circumstances when the administration for the city itself believes that this is compliant with the charter, and then it's a reasonable interpretation of that. It's the mayor, it's the city secretary. They're the only ones in this case that have provided any kind of insight in regards to what they believe was correct in regards to the reading of their particular charter. The appellants have never done that. The appellants have not filed anything with the court requesting any sort of affirmative relief. And that's why I think that whether you determine, and I think the first answer is this a reasonable interpretation of the statute? Or the charter? And the answer is yes, it is. And that there is evidence to support that, including from the old administration. But even that aside, and even giving some credence to the argument that is specifically tied to this, it is not jurisdictional in nature, and it can be forfeited. There's been no pleadings in regards to it at all. There is no affirmative relief for being requested, and Woodfill and other cases make it very clear that you have an affirmative duty. If you feel like the city secretary is not obliged by the, has satisfied the requirements of the charter, then you have the right to take it to court and you can't use your own veto power. Their entire argument relies upon their being able to veto a recall election to their, that's to their detriment. That's it. And so that is not what the case law delineates, and their reliance upon none is a little bit misplaced in that regard. I would point out one thing, and I'm sure counsel is going to say it. At the end, when the judge made his ruling, I would argue that maybe his decision, as counsel stated, was not as clear as it probably could have been. I would point out that the appellants did file a request for findings of facts and conclusions of law. I was hopeful that we were going to have that meted out so that we could clarify some of the things that the court had done in regards to that, but that didn't happen. I didn't have the ability to file that, and they went ahead and filed the appeal before the findings of facts and conclusions of law would have been due. So we never got to that point. I would have been hopeful that we could have, but we didn't. So, you know, there's some ambiguity in regards to what the court ruled. But the question is there evidence to support that reasonable construction of the charter that supports that the filing was due on the same day that the city told Ms. Tijerina that it was due? And the answer to that is yes, there is. So if there's not any other questions, I'll save the court 4 minutes, and I appreciate your time.
Any other questions?
No.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Your Honor, there was never a statement by the judge that this was ambiguous. Here's what he said: with business and in legal and legal in government, when we have a deadline, and he says this, what filed May 6 at 2:23, that means it starts counting the next day, and if it goes over to the weekend, it goes to that Monday. We don't have the weekend here, so I'm going to order that the date started May 7th and continued for 30 days, and this recall petition was filed on time, and I am going to issue a writ of mandamus at this time. So he didn't ever say that it was ambiguous. I mean, this is something that just came out in the appellee's reply brief. But going back to this language in the statute, or in the charter, and I keep calling it a statute because this is really what's guiding the city and what must guide this court in this case. If you look at the section that is in dispute here as to whether or not the date started on May the 6th or May the 7th when the city secretary gave Ms. Tijerina the forms for the recall petition, you have to look at the language. It says any qualified voter may make and file with the person performing the duties of the city secretary an affidavit containing the name or names of the officers whose removal is sought and a statement of the grounds for removal. The next sentence is the city secretary shall immediately notify in writing the officer sought to be removed that the affidavit has been filed and shall inform the officers of the statement of grounds. The city secretary shall, within a period of 2 working days from the date the affidavit was filed thereupon, make available to the qualified voters making such affidavit copies of petition blanks demanding such removal. There is nothing in this provision that says there is an acknowledgement issued by the city secretary to the person that is making the application or submitting the affidavit that they intend to file a recall petition. There's nothing there. This is a reading that has been created by the appellees. If you look at the statute, the charter, it only says how you start this, and it starts with the filing of an affidavit. If you then go to the provision that sets the deadline, it says all papers comprising a recall petition, whatever that is, whether it's the actual petition with the signatures in it, shall be returned and filed with the person performing the duties of the city secretary within 30 days after the filing of the affidavit here herein before provided for. And it says shall be filed within 30 days. There is no other way to interpret this.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
So the election was 3-2 against having the recall, right?
That was
the result
the city
of
commission.
The vote, right?
Yes.
Had the vote been in favor of doing the recall, would that recall have been void or voidable according to your argument?
I mean, I think a strong argument could have been made by a voter who was contesting the recall election that the election was illegal because it was not filed, because the petition, recall petition was not filed timely, and therefore any election being had after that would have been void.
But what do you say to council's argument that the council didn't have the right to reject it once the city secretary certified it, and that they had to seek remedies under Woodhill?
Well, Woodhill is a Supreme Court case, but so is Nunn. And Nunn is a Supreme Court case that is still in effect. And what the Supreme Court said was that in Nunn is that if it is not filed in time, the petition is not effective. It is void. It is void ab initio. It does not exist for purposes of whether or not a petition can be called. So if I'm a voter, I mean, there's a lot of case law out there that says that if an election is improperly held by a governmental entity, that a voter can challenge that election and enjoin it, right? What would happen in this case is you would be proceeding forward with a recall election that was illegal because it was based upon a recall petition that was filed too late. And so that we don't have that issue before us, but given the scenario that the court presents to me, that's what would in effect happen. Nunn essentially says that the petition did not essentially exist, and you got to go back to the drawing board, refile it, and start the process all over again.
Okay. Anything else? Thank you for
your
time.
Thank you.
The case will be under submission.